Well, once again, good morning, everyone. I'm Jeff, and I was watching kind of scrolling on Instagram the other night, and my feed kind of, there's a lot of pranks that come up on there. I always laugh when people get scared. So a lot of that stuff kind of floats through, but one caught my eye. In fact, it quite took me. It was a guy who was on the streets of New York. He saw a man who's homeless and big beard, straggly hair. He kind of was crouched over, sitting on the ground. And this guy walked up to him and sat right down beside him and introduced him. Instantly, the guy is looking at him like very jaded, going, "What are you trying to do to me?" Whatever. And he's like, "Buddy, no, I'm just, and he introduced himself. He reached out to shake his hand, and the guy didn't even know if he should shake his hand. He just was, you could tell, like, probably a lot had gone on, and he didn't trust many people. So the guy put his hand down, and he just kept talking to him. He's like, "I'm so-and-so, and man, I just saw you here, and you just look like you're just concerned about you. You okay?" Took a little while. He was telling stories, and then the guy started opening up. Finally, he said, "Hey, my name is," and he told him his name. And he says, "How long have you been down the streets here?" And they got into this conversation. He says, "You hungry?" He says, "I'm a little hungry." He says, "Could I buy you something to eat?" He said, "That would be great." So they went and got some food, and after a little bit of talking, you could just see this hard layer just starting to wear, getting thinner and thinner. And in the course of the conversation, he was like, "How long has it been since you got your haircut?" And they're kind of joking around. He says, "It's been a long time." He says, "You want a haircut?" He's like, "Actually, I would love a haircut." He's like, let's get you a haircut." So he takes him in, and he's in this barbershop, and they're mowing the beard, they're cutting the mane. I mean, his hair was everywhere. And then comes the reveal, and he looks in the mirror, and he's like, you couldn't believe the change. He says, "You need a new pair of pants." He says, "You gonna get me a pair?" He says, "Yeah, let's go get you some clothes." So they go out clothes shopping. And within, I don't know, it's hard to know, but within a few hours, there's this guy standing in front of this mirror in this men's store. And he is just, he can't believe the change. He's like, I can't believe this is me. I forgot who I am. It was just, so I'm scrolling, looking at pranks, and then I'm watching this video, and I'm like, oh my God, whoa. There was just something about this video that just so arrested me, something so beautiful about this act of kindness. I began scrolling through the comments, and just, I could tell so many of the people watching this video got ambushed with emotion to see this man just give time and a few resources to just show this guy, to restore his dignity and to say, "Man, I care about you, and you are lovable, and you're worthy of this." I stood back, and I'm thinking, there's just something about acts like that just seems so sacred and spiritual. You know what I mean? Just the stopping of one's life to notice someone who's maybe in some form of trouble, who's needing something, and just to kind of call it a time out on my life to say, "Can I help? Could you use a..." Hey, you all right? And to be able to be willing to part with something of yourself for the sake of another person. I don't care what it is, and I don't care who it is. There's something so divinely sacred about that act, isn't there? I can talk to a lot of people about church and religion and whatever, but when I talk to them about just simply caring for your fellow man, I rarely get anyone that's going, no, that's BS, man. No. The number of people that will look at me and say, that's really what this whole thing is about, isn't it? I say, yeah, I think so. If you look back over the tradition that we come out of, our ancestors were talking about this kind of thing nonstop. It was James who said, real religion, the kind that passes muster before God the Father, is this. Reach out to the homeless and the loveless in their plight. Other translations say, care for the widow and the orphan. Care for the most vulnerable. Paul said, just don't be selfish. Don't just look out for yourself. Look around. Invest yourself in the interest of others. He said, look at Jesus. Just look at Jesus for a second. He gave up divine privileges. He took the humble position of a slave. Our ancestors spoke of these counter-cultural, unselfish acts of kindness that can be done in anyone's everyday life as something being foundational to the spiritual journey. It's like, this is the essence of this thing. It's the heart, the kind of the true religion. It's the purest form. You know, a number of years ago, and it's been quite a number of years ago now, as church leaders, we began to recognize that we had a problem here at Friends. We had a problem with this reality of the true essence of pure, undefiled religion, being this kind of picture. And I'll tell you why we had a problem, because we were promoting a spirituality that didn't necessarily look like that. The brand of spirituality that we were talking about and that we were selling was largely about improving the lives of our members. It was selling a spirituality that would make you better. Give you a better life. We could offer, for some, forgiveness of sins. That was a perk of membership. You got a past that you want to let go of? We can fix that for you. Physical and mental well-being. Let's show you how you can experience this. People are going, oh yeah, bring it on. You want more peace? Yeah, we can get you that. Want a little more joy? You're not as happy as you'd like to be? Come on in. You need a loving and safe church family? Well, you've come to the right place. We got programs, folks. Come on in. Let's take care of you. We could even offer eternal life. You want to live forever? Came to the right place. Problem was this kind of spirituality that was different than the kind, perhaps, that Jesus really spent time talking the most about. His brand of spirituality seemed much less concerned with membership privileges and perks. In fact, the kind of spirituality that he talked about seemed much more concerned about membership responsibilities that could actually make a difference in our world. We began realizing we were off brand. We were selling something that we're not sure if Jesus was on stage, he would want to be talking about. This was disturbing. I mean, if you just kind of follow the trajectory, the kinds of things that Jesus wanted to talk about in the stories that we read. And one day, man, his followers are coming to him going, look it, we got to let these people go. You're talking all about, they're hungry. And he goes, why don't we feed them? And they're going, come on, don't be ridiculous. He says, yeah, how about you guys go out and feed them? Another time he's at dinner. It was customary at that time. I mean, you're walking around in dirty roads, oftentimes in sandals. It was customary to wash feet. Jesus did something out of the ordinary. Rather than, you know, the servants walking in and washing feet, he disrobed, put a towel around his waist, grabbed a water basin, and began washing the feet of his followers. His followers are freaking out, going, you're not touching my feet, Jesus. Not you. Not the rabbi. And he says, you let me wash your feet. Because if you can't get why I'm doing this for you, you don't get what I'm about. The greatest in my kingdom are the servants of all, are the ones who are willing to do this for their neighbor. It's these moments where his followers are like going, so countercultural. He said, you're the light of the world. Get out there and do good deeds. And let your light shine. You'll walk in a room and with your good deeds, you're going to light up that room. And those who can't see will see. He talked like this. He's not talking about perks. He's going, no, this is what we do. This is what my way looks like. He promoted a spirituality that made other people's suffering his problem. And he didn't just talk about it, he just role modeled it, it seems. What a stark contrast to a lot of the religion that many of us experienced. And I'll tell you this, as a church leader for many years, I was a part of a movement that was promoting a spirituality that didn't look like that. It's not figure, you know, the skepticism and the cynicism that exists today around religion, it's not hard to figure out why it's there. If I could get a buck for every time I've heard someone describe religion as self-serving, as kingdom building, as narcissistic, from the outside looking into religion, much of religion, it can appear to be a very self-absorbed community. Oh, it's amazing if you qualify to be in it, if you were raised in it, if you're able to kind of follow all the rules and feel like you're a part of it. Oh, it's an unbelievable place. But if you're outside the walls, it can be cold, it can be judgmental, it can be exclusive. There's a reason why people aren't excited about walking into a church, because they have a feeling what they're in for. As leaders, we began to realize just how off-brand the spirituality we were promoting had become. And the more we thought about it, this beautiful, this pure, undefiled religion that just seemed to give a shit about people, we knew it has the power to change the world. It has the power to change our families, our work environments, our neighborhoods. We said, man, we probably need to make some changes here. We gotta shift things up. So for those of us that have been around for a while, You will know this next part. We wrote a story, and we began telling the story again and again. It was called The Castle and the Well. And I want to tell it again because, like, over the last while, I've been talking to a lot of people. I've been asking, like, what do you think of the word water? The term water, as we talk about taking water, I've had so many people going, yeah, it's a little murky. I'm not really sure what you mean by that. Just like, oh my God. No, we're creeping. It's a story of a landowner who on his land discovers this natural spring of water. And so he builds a well to capture the water. And as a result, this landowner prospers. His crops succeed. He has large herds that are just incredibly healthy. The water is so valuable. He prospers. The neighbors around the community begin to hear about his water. And they begin coming to this landowner and asking, would you share some of your water with us? You see, the man was a generous landowner. And he said, absolutely. Come on, let's get you some water. And as a result of this man's generosity and the abundance of water, the entire community began to succeed, prosper. There was incredible harmony and peace in the land. People coming in from all over the place, grabbing on and taking hold of this water. One day, business calls, and this landowner pulls his family up, and they move. He keeps the land, and he puts some community leaders in charge of the well. And they move away. And for a while, everything ran as normal. Lots of people coming in, grabbing water, but there came a point where some of those people in charge began worrying that they might run out of water. There was a lot of people coming in. They began thinking about some of the people that were coming from certain neighborhoods, certain parts of the, coming from too far, and do they deserve it? Some people who had some different records, people that were maybe poor repute, and they started saying, you know what, no, that person, no. And over time, in order to kind of control who was getting what and how much was being given away, they began building a wall around this well. And it was like a stone-by-stone kind of thing, just trying to control, divert the traffic over here so they can look at us in the eye and we can say yes or no to it. But over time, that wall became a castle with chosen group of people within the castle getting all the water they need, more than what they need. And the surrounding community struggling, dying of thirst. Word got back to the landowner. The landowner can't even believe what he's hearing. He sends his son to investigate. The son shows up and is so upset. He bangs on the wall of that castle. They open up and he says, my father never intended the water to be distributed in this way. He never wanted walls around this thing. They're like, who are you? He says, I'm the son. The son began telling them stories of what life once looked like in this neighborhood. How people used to benefit so greatly from this. How the surrounding community looked so different than it did at this point. Some listening to that son began to get excited about this vision. And they began actually knocking down walls, making more access to the water. In fact, there were some who couldn't travel now to get the water, and they began distributing water out to these people, the community. And all of a sudden, signs of life begin to emerge again. Excitement, opportunity. It didn't take long for some of those people inside the castle walls to get freaked out again. They're going, uh-oh, here we go. In fact, the fear was so great that they hatched a plan and had the son assassinated. And over a short amount of time, those walls got repaired. And life went back to a big castle surrounding the water, where those lucky ones inside could have all the water they would ever need. And meanwhile, the surrounding community would suffer. If we told this story 10 times, we told it 300 times, 500 times. We told it again and again and again. Now, we had people saying, I'm tired of hearing about the castle. We're going to keep telling it. Because for thousands of years, the church has gravitated toward castle building, we believe. We've been promoting the perks of Christianity, of life within the castle walls. Come on in. Shut the door behind you. And let me tell you what life looks like in here, you lucky little. We said we can't be castle wall builders. There is something about spirituality, about sitting on the road, giving up your money and your time and your ear and your love to people who need it. That is the most deeply spiritual thing we got. It's the heart of this thing. It's the water. So we're going to take it. We're going to take it. We began just pounding this vision. If you remember, for all of those that were around, this is years and years ago that we started this. 2004. And people started getting excited. It was out of our water carrying that Project Mexico, which just happened last week, was born. Teams of kids start saying, we can take water. Teenagers saying, we will take water. They give up their spring break. They go down. They build homes for homeless people. They come back going, I made a difference. We initiated a huge project in Guatemala. We adopted a village, one of the worst hit areas in the world with chronic malnutrition. We went in and we built clean water systems, wastewater systems that wouldn't damage villages further downstream. We taught veggie schools and how to use different vegetables that would help their nutrition level. We built, we improved it at the medical center there. We built classrooms. This is over a 10-year project. We invested hundreds of thousands of dollars. People within this community saying, let's just give a shit about people that we might never, ever meet who need help. Locally, some people began signing up to volunteer for various organizations. This was just so amazing. We'd hear about the different ways people were taking water. It was in this era that some of us began donating blood, different blood products. There's a hairdresser within our community began cutting hair of homeless people down the mustard seed. Some began making lunches for kids going to school hungry. There was a family I remember. I was just reading through these stories. A family showed up one Sunday, pulled us aside, said, look, we're at a silent auction. We won a trip for four to Disneyland. Remember this, Vince? I don't know if he's here. Do we know a family who would never have a hope of going to Disneyland that could go? This is for them. Let's find them. Let's find a family who never would be able to. Oh, the joy in this family as they're saying, can we look? Can you help us find one? Oh, I love seeing the pictures. Oh. There's some people who heard about a single mom kind of on the run in a difficult place, but now having to find a place. So they rounded up amongst this small group of people within our community money for her damaged deposit. They said, we're going to get you in a new place. Then they rented the truck and they moved her in one Saturday. These aren't big heroic things, but I'm telling you, to watch people who had never done anything like that, to see the tangible impact of 3 hours of work, to see the way that that single mom was able now to flourish and her kids. You tell me that isn't true religion. There's a cosmetic dentist in our community. He just said, is there someone that you guys know that could use, you know, maybe they didn't have great teeth. Maybe they're really insecure. Maybe I'll do it for free. If you can point them out, I'll approach. We just saw people all from with different skills and talents just going, okay, what could I do? Where could I take water? For us, water became a metaphor to describe anything that we have access to that can be channeled to make our world better. Anything. Anything. So we just weekly started challenging people. Come on, take some water this week. Give a shit. Find someone. Just stop. Stop what you're doing, even for 15 minutes. Oh, man. And to watch people take this seriously, it was remarkable. We called this brand of spirituality an action-oriented spirituality. Not the spirituality that focuses on how much you know. Oh, let's hold a Bible quiz and let's see how many verses you can quote. Or let's see if everyone believes the same thing, because that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get everyone to believe in certain things. No. This action-oriented spirituality was a way of life. It's a way of life that prioritizes any learning and growth that needs to be done, that enables us to be able to make our world physically, emotionally, mentally, relationally better. That's spirituality. Learning, stretching, trying, anything that can equip me to live a life that is just a blessing to those around me. Yeah, does it make my life better? Yeah, it's a byproduct of it. Anything wrong with that? No. But the goal isn't just this, get inside the walls. I'm safe. No, the point of this spirituality is being a conduit of good things to our world. Could there be anything that would bring peace to our world more than people that are just saying it? Maybe it's not about just me. So over time, we've watched people who do this regularly, who've made this action-oriented spirituality their way of life. We've watched some of the things that they just have learned to do better and better. And I want to just talk about a few of them this morning, because I have a feeling that you're here this morning not because you need a perk, benefit type of spirituality. I don't think that's why you're here. I think actually you're here because you believe in this kind of spirituality. And some of you are doing exactly what I'm going about to talk about. One thing that great water carriers do is they're able to notice. They notice things around them. They're observant of situations and people and struggle. They somehow are able to, in the middle of their own pursuit of their own dreams, their own goals, their own challenges, they're able to just kind of get their head up and look around and notice what's going on in the lives of others. They're able to ask good questions. They're able to pick up on nonverbals. Sometimes it's not even what they hear, it's what they don't hear someone say. And they're going, something's smunky over there. and they do a little homework. I want to try something this morning. I want you, just for a second, and even for those that are watching the live stream or will listen to this podcast, you can do this wherever you are. I want you to just look around this room right now, and I want you to notice some the things in this room that are red. I just want you to just notice for a second everything around you. In the room that you're in, maybe you're driving right now, look around. If I was to test you, I want you to be able to point to something and say, oh, yeah, I see that red thing. Now I want you to close your eyes. Not if you're driving. Don't close your eyes if you're driving. And I want you to think about everything you just saw that's green. You can open them. I'm pretty sure you're going, what the heck? I didn't notice anything, and I'm going to tell you right now, you didn't likely notice anything that was green because you weren't looking for it. This is the thing about our focus. You can be so tunnel, and I can be so tunnel focused on what I'm needing, what I'm wanting, where I sit in my world right now, my struggles, my pains, my frustrations, and that's all I can see sometimes. When right around you and me, there are water opportunities that are just pregnant, that are needing to be addressed or craving to be addressed. And by just simply changing our focus and going, okay, what am I looking for? Am I looking for green or am I looking for red? In a 15-minute window, 5-minute window, to just observe, the water opportunities are often just right there within our own homes. We can have neglected kids who are sitting on iPads and phones in front of TVs, craving the attention of a parent. We can have partners who feel unheard or neglected or unimportant. We're just not looking. There can be extended family members, siblings, parents who are just struggling in some way, but we're just not seeing the green. We're looking for the red. And all it takes sometimes is just that little shift. If you zoom out a bit more and you're looking, you might notice a neighbor hasn't been coming out as much. You might notice a coworker, an acquaintance you've met, who just looks different. You might hear of something, and rather than just glossing over it, you might just ask a follow-up question. It's weird how little effort it takes to see water opportunities when your focus is just on the right thing. But you can get into that point where all of a sudden now they start bubbling to the surface. So the people that do this well, they notice. They just pick up on stuff. But then there's a problem often that happens when all of a sudden you see them. Now the overanalyzing begins to happen. It's like, where would I even start? What could I even do? I heard offer, but they'd probably get offended by that. And would it even make any difference? And, oh, man, I got so much to do. Chatting with Alessandra this week. Just talking through the message that we're doing this week. And she says, well, this reminds me of a song. Why don't you tell them what you told me?
This song's called Find These Arms, and I wrote it in processing, trying to help somebody with depression, and kind of that fear of reaching out to somebody, not knowing how they're going to take it, not wanting them to feel judged, not sure if it's going to come across the right way or how it's going to make me feel, and the fear that goes along with that, and not always. So I think sometimes we don't do anything because we're afraid of what will happen if we do. So we just kind of freeze.
What's it called?
Find These Arms.
I asked them to play it this morning. Maybe you could think about maybe those opportunities in your life that you've maybe seen and you've hummed and hawed and maybe second-guessed yourself out of helping. You know, beautiful. People that do this well, they wrestle with the complexity of knowing how, when to make someone else's problems their problem, when to make someone else's suffering their problem. And sometimes, you know what, it's not a pretty thing. Sometimes it's just really messy. I don't want to romanticize this morning, because a lot of taking water does not feel good. I'll just tell you that right now. It's not a perk. It's a responsibility of spirituality. It's life-changing, but it is messy. Sometimes you are looking at someone who's wrestling with depression, and they are going to get upset when you try to talk to them, perhaps. Sometimes you're going to reach out. You're going to feel the pull about a situation. Someone has dug their own hole. They've made their own poor financial decisions. And you're wrestling with going, geez, do I help that? Someone made poor relationship choices. You're going, if I help, are they just going to do this again? Yeah, this is part of the wrestle, right? Someone's misplaced priorities. Gee, should I just try to make sure that they understand that first before? And so sometimes what we can do is sit there wrestling into paralysis. And then we say, I'm not my problem. Not my monkeys, not my problem. I'm out. I don't need this hassle. I got enough. This is the typical cultural speak. But to be able to say, just wait a second. Is there something here? Is there something even little I can do? Just something. There will be times when you will reach out with the best intentions and someone's going to refuse your help. Just know it's going to happen. Someone is going to question your agenda. Doesn't mean it was wrong reaching out to help. After helping someone, that person might turn around and ask you for more. That could happen. And you might have to say, I'm sorry. I did what I can. And you might walk away a little irked. You might do something and that person doesn't even thank you. You might give hours to a cause and sit there afterwards going, geez, did I even move the dial a bit? These are the unromantic, unwarm and fuzzy feelings of water carrying. But I'm telling you, it is deeply spiritual work. It's the stuff that lies at the heart of this thing. This morning, I want to bring you back to what we believe is true religion. And I want to invite you to avoid castle syndrome. May we never be a castle building community. It celebrates all that we have in our little holy huddle. It doesn't give a shit about the people outside the walls. Simply be willing to make someone else's suffering your problem, in whatever way that might look like. Find your water. Can you imagine if we as a community could collectively, over this course of this year, find so many different water opportunities? We're just giving of ourselves. Here's the beautiful thing about water. It's like, as much as you can give away, it's like something gets replenished inside of us. There's some part of our wiring of humanity that is actually somehow regenerated in this process. Some of the people that hate their lives the most are the ones that never, ever figure out how to give it away. Would you be willing this week to take some water? Notice, maybe that's where it starts. Maybe at this point, it's been tunnel vision. You're looking for red, but you haven't been thinking about the green. Even in the midst of your own need, even in the midst of what you would feel like crisis thinking, feeling like your life is a dumpster fire right now, let me challenge you something. Even in the middle of chaos, for you to get your eyes up and just look for a need around you, watch what that even does inside of you. Maybe you've been staring at needs and you've been paralyzed, trying to figure out which one will be perfect, which one would yield the best return on investment. Can I just tell you, pull the trigger and do something. Just do it, whatever it is. And you'll learn from it. And then be careful with the expectations that come with that. Be very careful with those. It could be the most important hour, not only of your week, but the benefactor.